Are there hidden connections between UFOs and other unexplained phenomena? We'll talk with Phil Imbrogno about that when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Phil Imbrogno has been investigating and researching paranormal phenomena for more than 30 years. He has a BA degree in astronomy from the University of Texas, Bachelor of Science, Earth Science from Northeastern Boston College, and a master's degree in chemistry from MIT. He has been a science educator for the past 25 years. He has authored countless magazine articles on science and the paranormal and has appeared or done research for a number of major television presentations on UFOs, astronomy, and the paranormal as well. Here he is back on Coast to Coast. Phil, how are you?
I'm doing very well, George. How are you?
Good. I'm looking forward to talking with you. Fascinating subject today.
Well, definitely.
UFOs and other unexplained phenomena. You know, and there's so much unexplained out there these days, Phil. It seems to be growing, doesn't it?
You know, I was just going to mention that. Like, business is actually too good. I mean, the number of experiences that people are having is incredible. And the fact is that there are people having experience that never cared about paranormal phenomena or UFOs that are having some type of experience that they can't explain that totally changes their life, and they're looking for answers. So who do they go to? You know, who do you call? You know, you don't call Ghostbusters. You find someone who will listen to you and believe you that you've had these experiences. And the first person that these people go to is the scientist. And that's actually, you know, the wrong person to go to, first of all, because, you know, science has really turned a deaf ear to a lot of the borderline sciences, as they call it, the paranormal. And, you know, there's a reason for that, because what people are experiencing is taking them outside the normal realm of understanding of the physical universe. They're experiencing things that many scientists say cannot possibly exist. So if they can't possibly exist within the confines of their theory, then it can't exist. So these people get very frustrated. So they look for some sympathetic ear to relate their experiences.
I was talking with Rosemary Ellen Guiley several weeks ago about some of your work with her, and we were talking about EVPs, electronic voice phenomena, as well.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about some of your work with her.
Well, you know, collecting the EVP, we've been collecting EVP at a number of locations where these paranormal experiences occur that are marked by ancient stone chambers. But the EVP stuff is very, very interesting. You know, when I first heard about it, you know, I was kind of skeptical as the way people were receiving these signals by the AM sweeping radio. But, you know, for years and years, UFO investigators have been getting EVP on their cassette recorders doing UFO interviews with stuff coming on the tapes for years. And now all of a sudden, with the increase in technology, people are getting these radios and other devices and actually picking up voices. Well, I've heard some of these voices, and I have to tell you that when you ask a question and then the question responds to you by your name,
yeah.
I mean, you really got to consider that. So what I did with some of these EVP signals, and of course one of the good sources to go to for a collection of these is Rosemary, and I took the signals and I put in, and one of the things about being a scientist is I have access to a very good lab. And I have a considerable amount of equipment.
That helps.
Oh, yeah, considerable amount of equipment. So what I did is I took the signals that were already, you know, on the computer, and I played them through the oscilloscope. And the thing is that the bizarre thing is that there are two signals there. You have the AM signal that's sweeping the channels, and then there's another signal riding on top of it. And this is riding on top of the carrier wave, the EVP signal. Now, also, these EVP signals come in on a very, very wide bandwidth. And the normal AM band has sort of a narrow bandwidth, but the EVP signals, the bandwidth is very, very wide. And that's unusual. And that's why you pick up voices while it's sweeping. But there are two signals there. And what seems to be happening is that the EVP, which is a fainter signal, is piggybacking on the AM signal, allowing it to be heard. Now, this is something that's done in amateur radio for many, sure, many years. So what happens like this, if you're listening on a particular frequency and somebody transmits a signal and they produce what's called a dead carrier, your receiver picks up that transmission, mm-hmm, but there's no modulation on it, no voice. But in the background, riding in on your signal, you hear voices from stations that are very, very far away. These fainter signals that you would not normally hear on the normal radio operations are piggybacking on that transmitting signal and riding in to your receiver. Now, the EVP seems to be doing the same thing, but it's broadcasting over what I calculate about 600 kilohertz. And this is unbelievable. So an idea I have is that if you have a receiver,
okay,
and you take an RF generator and you send a signal to the receiver to produce a carrier, the thing is that why would you want to use the crowded AM bands? All of these boxes that we see that are popping up now, and I've seen quite a few of them, they operate in the crowded AM band. And they use the AM band because there's a variety of signal there. And the EVP seems to need that signal, the stations, to transmit over and piggyback on that signal so it can be heard by these receivers, which aren't really that sensitive to begin with. So if you take a particular frequency, like the long wave frequencies, long wave bands, the lower frequencies, and you generate a dead carrier, theoretically, you should be able to pick up EVP without the need of crowded AM signals.
Interesting.
So when you listen to these AMs, these sweeping radios, you're sweeping through the entire band. And the reason why it's sweeping is because the bandwidth of these EVP signals is so wide that it has to sweep to get the entire word in. It has to cover a great number of kilohertz in the band, and it also needs the signal. But if you can generate your own signal, you wouldn't need the AM signals. So you would have a clear voice there, and communication could be established. This is why, there's so much controversy about these EVP signals, because somebody would say, oh, well, there's so much talking on there from the AM stations. If you ask a question, you just may coincidentally get an answer that you hear. But let me tell you, I heard one of these things where Rosemary and I were asking, do you have a message for us?
I remember that.
And,
yeah,
and the voice said, Rosemary, do you have a message for me? I mean, give me a break. And this was a voice that was coming in. It was in the background, and it was constant. It was spread over a very wide bandwidth, and it was, if you would not pick up the AM signals that way with the sweeping, because it would just chop it up. And we also got a number of different responses that day. It was coming across and it was saying my name on the EVP. And, to me, if you ask a question and you get a direct answer that, there's no AM station that's giving you that response, this is something to consider. I was pretty skeptical about this at the beginning, but there is something to this EVP coming in on these radios. And probably people have been picking it up for years and probably not identifying it. I know for a fact, being an amateur operator for many years in the past, that people have talked about picking up various signals below 10 meters and signals and voices not knowing where they came from. sounding, they call them like ghost voices. So this has been around for a while, but with technology today, I think that the technology today can be used, but it has to be modified, and we may be opening up an entirely new field here. But the fact is that where do these voices come from, and how do they hear your voice?
Exactly. It's okay. Like they know, Phil. They know.
You know, somebody knows. I was thinking perhaps, you know, in theoretical physics, there's this new theory now about parallel realities. Every possible choice that a person makes can be, it happens. In other words, in one particular reality, you bought a red car. In another one, you bought a green car. That may be the only difference. But every decision that you make fractures into a new reality. So you would have all of these multiple, limitless, parallel realities around you. What if this is true, and you have human beings who are in other realities doing the same thing with the boxes, picking us up and saying, are you over there? Yes, I'm here. Where are you? I'm in America. One of the voices said, in America. And do you have a message for me from the beyond? No, do you have a message for me?
It's almost as if they're in the same kind of a warp that we are, but in a different dimension, isn't it?
Yes, a different reality.
Yeah.
And that all of these realities exist and people are doing the same thing in that same location. And that, you know, the oscillators in these radios, you know, they're vibrating and picking up a particular frequency, but it's possible that, you know, you are also, your voice is also carrying on that wave, and it's connecting in a dimensional rift. Now, the best frequency to attempt this, of course, is the very long waves, because this had great penetrating power. So if we're going to attempt with EVP to bridge the dimensional rift, the best way to do it is with long wave. And the United States government experiments on those bands by sending signals through the earth because they have such great penetrating power. You know, you're talking about, you know, a wavelength with, that has a wavelength of about 2,000 meters. So if we talk about EVP and we say, well, yeah, let's try the very low frequencies below 30 kilohertz, 10 kilohertz I figured would be better. I've done experimentation down there just with radio astronomy, and you hear a lot of strange things, crackling sounds, shifting of the Earth's magnetic field, the ionization of the atmosphere. You hear the after effects of solar bursts. So you're picking up a lot of stuff that you know, is beyond the range of normal radio reception. Plus, it's very quiet down there.
Good research on this, Phil.
So
it'll pay off eventually.
Well, you know, I hope so. I got all these crazy ideas about doing this and just putting it all together. But the technology is there. It's just that it has to be modified in order to do this. The people who are building this equipment are doing it for scientific purposes. They're not thinking about picking up voices from another dimension in a dimensional rift. Now, the fact is that some of these conversations sound like people, like you're talking, having a conversation
sure.
with another person. But then there are other transmissions that take place, which actually may be the result of other types of entities that may exist in a dimensional state close to ours that are possibly not human. So this is an open field here. Who we have that open line in. Now, one of the things I found fascinating about this EVP reception, you don't seem to be communicating with the same, let's say, individual for very long. It shifts. That would be logical because the conditions would shift constantly and you would constantly be connecting randomly with all of these parallel realities. It's like, for example, when you're working with ham radio, you turn it on at a certain part of the day, the atmosphere becomes ionized, and you're talking to somebody, let's say, in Hawaii, You talk to somebody in Hawaii for maybe about 10 minutes, and they fade out. And all of a sudden, somebody from California comes in. You may talk to California for about 5 or 10 minutes. Then all of a sudden, Washington State comes in, or Texas comes in. And as time goes on, and as different parts of the atmosphere become ionized, you actually connect with different communicators. It seems to me this is what's going on, is that this dimensional rift is being created through this radio reception, and that it's constantly switching to all of these different communicators, so you really don't establish a very long conversation because you're talking to different people fading in and new ones coming out. And you're probably doing the same on that side. You're just part of this whole complex array of this communication through these parallel realities and dimensional rifts. I think it's pretty exciting research, and I can't understand why, you know, certain engineers and physicists that I know, you know, aren't really intrigued by this.
Well, how did you make the connection between, as you have done, these magnetic anomalies and the paranormal phenomena? How did you tie that together?
Well, it was kind of an accident. If you take, for example, the boxes out to these areas where I've done research, they work well. Rosemary will attest to that.
Yeah.
We picked up a number of them, but we purposely went to these places because of the work that I've done in these places graphing these anomalies. So it was kind of by accident, and it stems back to the sightings of the UFOs over the Hudson Valley back in 1980s. And they were concentrated in particular areas with a lot of high strangeness. So, I mean, the UFO sightings were all over the place, but we plotted them on a map, and we found out that there was a central point for these sightings. And that was around a place called Putnam Valley in Kent Cliffs, New York. That was the apex, the central point of these sightings, the emanation point. But also around these areas, people were reporting alien creatures, electromagnetic phenomena, sightings of Bigfoot-like creatures, apparitions and ghosts. My gosh, what's going on here? So at the time, I was working closely with the late Dr. J. Allen Hynek, and we had conversations about this. And he came up here, and we spent a lot of time in the field collecting reports. And I said, but what's going on here with these other reports, these abductions, these alien encounters, these strange creatures in these areas? They seem to be timed with the appearance and the disappearance of the UFO sightings. And I said, we have to include this, Alan, in the study. And he said, no. He said, you cannot talk about this stuff because the press will have a field day with it. We have to keep UFOs very respectable. So for many years, I kind of like put these cases on the side. And later, after Night Seas, which published the Hudson Valley UFO sightings, I went back and investigated many of these cases and found out something incredible, that these things, these experiences were clustered. They weren't spread out over an area. They were clustered in areas. So the next thing to do would be to go out there and investigate to see what you can find. And we found some type of, you know, markers or, you know, stone structures, standing stones. But the thing is that we later did magnetic anomaly studies in these areas and came up with something very, very fascinating.
Well, let's talk about that, the magnetic anomalies, when we come back, Phil. Hey, are you a member of Streamlink yet, where you can get the podcasting downloads back for a full year, soon to be 2 years, then 3, 4, 5, and all the way back, as far back as we can go? Just go to coasttocoastam.com, and for pennies a day, you can sign up for Streamlink. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Phil Imbrogno, our guest tonight. Phil, exactly what is a magnetic anomaly?
Well, yeah, a magnetic anomaly is, it's just what exactly it says. An anomaly is something out of the ordinary. There, it increases or decreases in the Earth's magnetic field. And the Earth generates a magnetic field just like a magnet, and most people, you know that. But what they don't know is that the magnetic field is constantly changing, and that there are a great number of things that affect these magnetic lines of force that come from the Earth's core. And one of the things that affects it, of course, is the geology in the area. So you can have areas where the Earth's magnetic field is intense or low. And you can also have areas where these magnetic lines of force start overlapping each other and wrapping and braiding around each other. And this is where you start to see the anomaly areas. For example, when we did studies in the area, and the geology out in New York is quite unique because of its history with the smashing of the continents and so on.
Smashing of the what? I missed that.
The smashing of the continents together to
continents. Form okay,
Pangea,
sure thing. Okay,
you know, but the thing is that during this this occurrence when part of Connecticut crashed into the coastline of North America, a lot of the material underneath was melted down and pushed upward, mm-hmm. and this heavier stuff was iron ore. So in the Hudson Valley of New York, you find a great deal of magnetite. Magnetite is magnetic. It's exactly what the name says. So these areas out there are magnetic anomalies. They're increases or decreases in the Earth's magnetic field. Now, the thing is that I went out there with a team to do magnetometer studies. And one of the what led us to that is because we're in this area where all these strange occurrences are taking place, all this paranormal phenomena, besides the UFOs. I mean, the UFOs led us into all this stuff that was going on, and some incredible stories about space-time being distorted and so on, people seeing images from the past and things like that, and alien creatures. I mean, my gosh, what's going on here? So, you know, if you take into account that all the witnesses are telling you the truth, I mean, then you have something very bizarre going on. So I went out there, and one of the things I did is that we were getting compass deviations. We were trying to get the directions on the compass where something was seen in the sky, and we couldn't get accurate compass readings. The compasses were shifting back and forth, and there was some type of deviation in the compass. This led me to bring in a magnetometer. Now, I have to say this, you know, most of these people who are doing like paranormal research come out with these little meters and stuff that measure different types of electromagnetic fields and EMP fields and changes in the magnetic field. This stuff doesn't work. There are magnetometers out there that are being used by the International Geophysical Year and other scientists, organizations, geologists, and so on. They measure the magnetic fields in the area. And I was fortunate enough to rent a magnetometer, a real scientific magnetometer.
Sure.
It actually costs us about $300 a day to rent.
That's pretty darn expensive, Phil.
Oh, yeah, because this is a super sensitive, real equipment that's being used. And, of course, I would have loved to, you know, take it around the world and start measuring the magnetic fields of other places where there's been a lot of UFO sightings and so on. But, you know, I was fortunate enough to have these locations in the Hudson Valley. So I went out there and started measuring the Earth's magnetic field. And in these areas of high strangeness, all of a sudden, you see this great deviation in the Earth's magnetic field for some particular reason. And most people in the paranormal think that increases in the Earth's magnetic field, positive magnetic anomalies, is where phenomena generates. I found the total opposite. And I was kind of looking for that because I heard for years about people saying, oh, you know, there must be an intense magnetic field over there. UFOs are appearing there.
Almost like ley lines, right?
Well, ley lines, really, no one knows what a ley line is. They have something to do with the Earth's magnetic field,
yeah.
But they don't seem to register on magnetometers. There seems to be something else with ley lines. But ley lines may be a secondary, almost dimensional product of the magnetic
mm-hmm.
field. So this is what I'm getting into, that there's in the magnetic braids that are formed in particular areas, there's something else going on there. And this something else going on is where you see paranormal phenomena. But the type of magnetic field has to be a particular reading, And I found that we're dealing with areas of the paranormal contain extreme negative magnetic anomalies.
Negative.
Yeah, that doesn't mean, you know, good or bad.
No, I understand.
Yeah, you know, some people may think that. But there's nothing wrong with it. It means there's a considerable drop in the Earth's magnetic field. And I'm talking about a drop of, in some of the readings, 20 or 30 times the normal reading of the Earth's magnetic field.
Interesting.
And it's in these areas, by the way, where we got these readings, where not only do you have the central point of the UFOs, but also in a very small clustered area, the generation of paranormal phenomena. And also when you bring in these new sweeping AM radios, EVP, you know, the boxes, the mini box, and so on, you're picking up stuff like crazy in these areas. It's being generated in these particular areas. So we took the readings and we graphed them all. Okay, we made these graphs because, you know, with the numbers and everything and showing how the Earth's magnetic field is changing, and in every one, they peak. The anomaly peaks in sort of like a V. It almost looks like, because you don't want to say the word vortex, but it does. In other words, you have the Earth's magnetic field coming in from two locations, and all of a sudden, it starts getting lower and lower and lower, and then it drops considerably.
What causes the drops, Phil?
You know what? I wish I knew for sure, but it has something to do also with the geology in the area. The area where most of this is occurring, the geology underneath is a layer of quartzite and a layer of magnetite. So what's happening, the Earth's magnetic field is being deviated around this this magnetite, but it's being twisted around this magnetite, and it seems to be disappearing. And that's about what I can say. Where is it disappearing? It's disappearing somewhere where the magnetometer can't pick it up, and that's outside our physical universe.
Are these like portals?
You know what? I hate to use the word portals, but there's no other explanation for it. So we took our findings down to the Lamont Dougherty Observatory down in New Jersey, and this is where they have all the Earth core samples, all the core samples from geologic expeditions, mm-hmm. and showed the data to a number of geophysicists, and they said, this is incredible. And they said the only thing that can cause a reading like this with the magnetometer, and they didn't question our findings because, you know, at one particular point, I had one of their scientists with us. And they said, if you have a sphere of magnetite, of iron, pure iron that's magnetic, 16 feet in diameter, buried 30 feet underneath the ground, you would get magnetometer readings that way. And I said, yes, but who's going to take a sphere that's 16 feet in diameter, made of pure magnetite, and bury it underneath of the ground? Why would they do that? And he said, I don't know. The thing is that they couldn't explain the readings that I got. And unfortunately, due to expense and everything, I wish that I could have done a considerable number of locations to cross-check everything, but that wasn't possible. To make this more complex is that these particular areas also, you have incredible amount of radio interference, and you have compass deviations, and these are backed by the magnetometer readings. And plus, if you add all the strange phenomena to this, and there's no coincidence that all of the strange phenomena is generating around negative magnetic anomalies. And I come up with a theory about that.
You may be onto something. What is the theory?
Well, I hope so. You know, I try to use my scientific background. I got in trouble a number of times up at MIT proposing all of these crazy theories. But, you know, I mean, what can I tell you? Anyway, imagine this. Imagine the Earth's magnetic field like strands of rope. And where these rope or string or shoestring or whatever you want to call them overlap each other, they make like a braid. And you could have multiple braids for the intensity of the magnetic field. Now, if you take a rope, let's say, and you loop it around, which these magnetic fields are doing because of the iron ore, the looping around each other, you make like a loop with an opening there. So if you pull it, you make a knot, and you have an intense magnetic reading there. However, if you loop it over and you don't pull it as a knot, you have an opening there. And in that opening is your negative magnetic anomaly. And it's almost like, for example, when you have a sink full of water and you allow the water to go down the drain and you see the vortex, the funnel going down.
Sure.
And you could put your finger right in the middle of that and not get your finger wet because the water is all pushed to the side.
As long as it's spinning fast enough, right?
Right. So you have these magnetic fields that are produced and you have this negative magnetic anomaly in the loop, so to speak. In that particular loop, magnetic fields have a tendency to close down these dimensional rifts, these dimensional portals. It's like pulling the string and making the knot and closing it off. And the intensity there closes the doorway. But if it loops over and that negative magnetic anomaly is formed, you have that opening there. This allows almost like that funnel or in a tornado in the center, allows this connection between our world and perhaps another dimension or reality.
And how many other dimensions could be there? Endless, I would assume.
Well, you know, according to string theory, and people, you know, string theory has been debated for so long, and, you know, everybody's always looking for one all and everything theory to tie all the forces of the universe together. And just like strings tying together certain parts of a reality, a rope, you know, string theory can explain tying all the forces of the universe together. But string theory, originally they were talking about 20-something dimensions, but mathematical models show that 20-something dimensions would not be stable. They would collapse on each other. But a theory called the M theory talks about 11 dimensions in any part of the physical universe.
11
dimensions. And these dimensions are separated by membranes, and that they can exist in a stable, and it's very stable in any part of the physical universe. Now, most people have to understand the difference between a parallel universe and the idea of another dimension. A dimension is actually in our physical universe. It's just another area of space in which we as human beings can't perceive or turn to. And there may be 11 different dimensions in your studio with you.
Sure.
In my room with me, 11 other different dimensions where it's outside of your reality, but still in your physical universe with you. And it's very possible that these, at least some of these dimensions, are inhabited by different types of beings having, you know, an intelligence from that of an animal to a super intelligence. It could be responsible for a lot of our paranormal phenomena and the generation of a lot of phenomena that's increasing, especially what has intrigued me about this are shadow people sightings. People are seeing them all over the place. if you can imagine this, that there's a dimension close to us, and there are beings over there that can press against the dimensional membrane, we would see them as a shadow image, and they may be able to perceive us a lot clearly. So as time goes on, and it probably happened in the past a number of times, for some reason or another, the Earth's position around the galaxy, some other reason, these dimensional areas come closer together, allowing phenomena from a dimension that's very close to ours to come into our reality. And I believe this is what we're seeing now with the increase in paranormal phenomena.
Including UFO sightings.
Definitely UFO sightings. But, you know, the UFO situation is a very complex phenomenon. It depends upon who you talk to. You see, human beings have a flaw. They like to put everything in categories so they can understand them.
True.
When they can't understand something, human beings say they can't exist, or everybody else is wrong, and it has to be this because I feel comfortable with this because I've identified that UFOs are all alien spacecraft from another galaxy or another planet, another star system, or whatever. But the UFO phenomena is an incredibly complex phenomena, and it has probably a number of explanations. Not all UFOs are created equal. Some come from different locations. Some are generations of different types of phenomena. I would be very surprised if all UFO sightings turned out to be nothing more than somebody else's spaceships from another world. Some of them could possibly be. But I believe that a percentage that we see are from a parallel reality.
What about the demon end, as some people think as well, Phil?
The demon. Well, you know, I've had a lot of conversations with, you know, people who are into the occult and investigating the occult, the demonologists and so on. And, I mean, you can identify any type of creature the way you want to do it. If there's a creature that's a dimensional creature that's an intelligence, you know, it may not be too much different than a human being, but it may be have extraordinary abilities to be able to cross the dimensional rift. You know, if you want to identify that creature as being demonic or that, I mean, you're going to do that. People usually, when they have experiences and they study this, they try to identify it according to what they want to believe it is.
Well, when we come back, Phil, I want to talk about UFOs and also about your trip through underground tunnels in Brewster, New York. This is a fascinating story as well. Phil's book, by the way, is called Interdimensional Universe. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's George at Coast2CoastAM.com. We'll be right back.